Hi, it's Patrick here.
Every hour of the day, the Voice of London goes round the world.
Well, now it'll be going round to not quite so many places. The BBC World Service announces huge cuts. Some language services will disappear altogether. Others, like the Russian service, will exist only online. The argument is that's where people get their news. Consider how many Russians responded when they heard about that lethal bomb at the Moscow airport.
When these attacks happened at the airport, do you think that people were thinking, oh, well, I've got to wait to hear what the Russian service has to say on radio? No, people went immediately to your website. And this is where they expected to find the latest information.
But critics of the cuts say the BBC's language services are hugely influential, and they often provide the only impartial news.
As a free man, I take pride in the word, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
I'm here with Patrick, and it's time to talk words. Rawr. New words, old words, censoring everything.
This podcast, The World in Words, and The Big Show, the World Radio program, are co-productions of, yes, the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH radio station here in Boston. Online, we're at theworld.org. This podcast is at theworld.org/language. That's where you can find my blog posts that accompany each podcast. You can also find them at patrickcox.wordpress.com. There's also a Facebook page called The World in Words, and I'm on Twitter. My handle is Patrick Cox, PatriCox. This week, I'm devoting the entire pod to one single story, massive cuts of the BBC World Service, cuts that are going to result in the end of many ways of listening to the BBC worldwide, including in several different languages. The BBC World Service began broadcasting in 1932. Back in those days, it was called the BBC Empire Service. And the first non-English language services followed 6 years later in 1938. They were in Arabic and Latin American Spanish. It's kind of interesting to think that those were the first two non-English services. These days, the BBC is heard in 31 languages besides English. But, of course, after this week's announcement, that number is about to go down. Full disclosure here, as you know, because I say it every week, this podcast is a BBC World Service co-production, so I'm very close to the story. I personally am not a BBC employee, and neither the pod nor the big show is directly affected by the cuts. To tell you who and what is affected by them is the big show's Laura Lynch. She's reporting from London.
For more than seven decades, in a host of different languages, the BBC has been the voice heard around the world.
Slušate BBC.
Dobro jutro iz Londona, ja sam Jelena Bogavac.
Ora po shkon 10, koha për të kaluar në programet tona të BBC-s në Shqip.
But soon it won't sound the same. The World Service is actually paid for by a grant from the British government, and that grant is being cut as part of overall government spending reductions. Today, the director of BBC's Global News, Peter Horrocks, said it means losing a vast audience.
I'm very sad to say that we estimate that about 30 million people out of the 180 million who use the World Service every week will lose the World Service as a result of these changes, which are required of us and imposed by the UK government funding cuts.
Services in five languages, Serbian, Albanian, Macedonian, Portuguese for Africa, and English for the Caribbean, will close completely. Radio broadcasts in Mandarin, Russian, Vietnamese, and a number of others will stop, though they'll still get news online and via cell phone. Shortwave broadcasts will be severely reduced, and some English language programs will be dropped. In the House of Commons today, opposition Labour MP Dennis McShane accused the Foreign Secretary, William Hague, of ruining the World Service.
Because he's doing, in part, what no dictator's ever achieved, silencing the voice of the BBC, the voice of Britain, the voice of democracy, the voice of balanced journalism at a time when it is more than ever needed.
But Hague says it's past time for the World Service to change its ways.
The BBC World Service has a viable and promising future, but it is not immune from public spending constraints or from the reassessment of its priorities. While any closures may be regretted, they would not be necessary at all were it not for the inherited BBC pension deficit and the vast public deficit inherited from the previous government.
World Service managers say the cuts are painful, yet even they admit changing technology makes some services almost obsolete. The BBC's Lillian Landor agrees the Russian service has an illustrious past, but she pointed to Monday's suicide bombing at a Moscow airport as an example of why radio no longer matters there.
When these attacks happened at the airport, do you think that people were thinking, oh, well, I've got to wait to hear what the Russian service has to say on radio? No, people went immediately to your website, and this is where they expected to find the latest information.
And so the switch to distributing news via the internet or cell phone. Radio will still be heard in many parts of the world, but a shrinking world service will be forced to pick and choose just who hears what the BBC has to say. For The World, I'm Laura Lynch in London.
Now, this isn't the first time that the BBC World Service has cut foreign language services. There used to be, in fact, many more of them. I've worked with people from the Polish service, the German service, the Slovakian service. All of those services now gone. And part of the reason, of course, is the people who speak those languages and who listen to those services are in better shape now than they were during the Cold War, when, you know, those services really meant something in Poland, in what was then East Germany, what was then Czechoslovakia. The need to get, you know, relatively impartial, unbiased information into those places just isn't as important these days because they have a thriving news media of their own. But that's not the case with all of the countries whose language services have been cut this time around, as we're about to hear. What's coming up is an interview with Peter Horrocks, director of BBC Global News. He's the guy in Laura's story who said that about 30 million people will lose the ability to listen to the World Service. He also said that those cuts, or presumably other cost-saving measures that might have been taken, were required as a result of fiscal cuts from the British government, specifically the Foreign Office, the British equivalent of the State Department. That is the agency that has funded the World Service. The BBC's Claire Balderson pushed Horrocks on the point of who exactly decided on which services to cut.
They are imposed by the funding cuts that come from the Foreign Office, but you've made the decisions about where to cut. And you said when you talked to staff making the announcements today that you wanted to ensure that the World Service maintains and strengthens its reputation. You said you wanted to invest, not retrench. But what we've heard from you is a big retrenchment.
We need to strengthen our journalism and the quality of our journalism. And in order to do that, we need to make savings, regrettably, in the areas where we're less effective, where we're maybe slightly less needed than we were in the past, where markets and audiences have changed. But these are not changes that we would have wanted to make. With more funding, of course, we would have kept more of those services going. But in order to maintain the quality, for instance, the quality of the kind of programme that people get through the World Service English Service, we need to make choices and make sure that we've still got the great news gathering and the great journalistic expertise that this represents.
You say places where we're less needed than in the past, but you're cutting radio services to China, Vietnam, Ukraine, Spanish for Cuba, places where there's a definite shortage of the kind of impartial broadcasting that you were talking about today.
There is, and that's why we're keeping services going using online, which is and information to mobile phones, which is a new and different way of distributing. The fact is that shortwave audiences in many parts of the world, not all parts of the world, our audiences in Africa, for instance, in West Africa in particular, are still very strong. So where shortwave is still a significant way that people consume, we'll keep those distributions up. But in other parts of the world, our radio audiences have gone down. We think the best way of having a quality relationship with the audience and also to be cost effective, because that's part of the equation as well, is to move towards online services.
What does what you've announced today tell us about your commitment to audiences in Europe? Because you're closing Europe Today, an English language programme, closing the Serbian, the Macedonian, the Albanian services, closing radio that goes to Russia. There's really going to be almost no broadcasting to Europe, either in European languages or directly from the English language service.
Well, clearly, Europe is a more developed part of the world where there is free media, where there are also technologies whereby if people wish to consume us, they can consume us through the internet or through satellite or through cable distribution. So, for instance, there are many parts of Northwest Europe where people can consume in that way. And the services to the Balkans have been playing an important role. However, the Balkan region is more stable than it was, and those are relatively small audiences. This is about prioritisation. If at all possible, we would have liked to have kept those services going, but I'm afraid, because of the funding constraints by the Foreign Office, we've had to make some tough choices.
Which audiences, though, are most important to the World Service? You, your predecessor, closed the Thai service in the last round of cuts. We've no longer have the two dedicated English language programmes to Asia. Where is the priority? Who are we speaking to?
Well, it's not about a single continent. It's obviously about the different circumstances for different countries. So the Burmese service, which is so important, and we know from Aung San Suu Kyi that nurtured her through her confinement, that's absolutely being sustained. So we're making selections according to what our audiences need, and that's a complex picture across the world, but the thing that unites it is responding to the way that markets and audiences are changing, and then having to do that within the funding constraints that we have.
You sounded really very angry when you talked about those funding constraints earlier today. The World Service is taking a disproportionate hit when it comes to the cut in the Foreign Office's budget. That's unfair, isn't it?
I've made it clear how the numbers stack up. I don't know whether I was angry. I certainly am passionate about it. I think that everyone in the World Service is passionate about what they do. Kofi Annan once described the BBC World Service as Britain's greatest gift to the world. That's what motivates the people on this programme, on this service, and that's what I care about. And I'm putting the facts in front of the audience in the way that BBC journalism does. We'll give you the facts and people can make up their minds.
Did you fail to make that case to the Foreign Office?
We fought as hard as we possibly could. The changes that are being announced today have been spelt out in exhaustive detail to the Foreign Office. The British Foreign Secretary had to give permission, as is a part of the agreement between the BBC and the British government, about the closure of those language services. And the Foreign Office is absolutely aware of our analysis of what would need to happen under this funding settlement.
And did they stop you from closing more language services?
We agreed the language service closures. The BBC chairman wrote to the Foreign Secretary requesting language service closures, and those are the closures that were agreed.
Peter Horrocks of BBC Global News. Up now, a couple of dissenting voices. First, Joseph Nye. He's a professor of international relations at Harvard.
I think it's unfortunate that Britain is cutting the budget for the BBC World Service. It provides an enormous amount of soft power for Britain. The president of Tanzania says that he starts every day by listening to the BBC. It's pretty hard to beat that for influence. I don't know of anything that Britain does that has as big an impact as the BBC. I think it gets a fair amount of bang for the pound, and it's hard to see what gets more.
Joseph Nye of Harvard. Now to John Tusser. He's a former managing director of the BBC World Service. He spoke with the BBC's James Naughty.
I think it's awful for BBC World Service listeners because they won't have access to the programmes. It is awful for the BBC, for British foreign policy, because they're now weakening substantially one of the most important elements of international cultural diplomacy. And it is terrible, really, really terrible for the BBC World Service, which now sees itself put into second position, well below Voice of America. And the Voice of America has always been regarded as a vastly inferior international broadcaster. So it really is bad, 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 and it needn't have happened.
When you say it needn't have happened, what, given what the government visited on the BBC, was the alternative?
The alternative was this extraordinary earlier decision to not to take money out of the Department for International Development. Well, what in heaven's name is the provision of free, open, unbiased information, but one of the most important ways of conveying international aid? So to have lopped, they could easily have lopped 50 million off the DFID. I defy them to say that anybody would have noticed, and they could have preserved the BBC World Service, which, as I say, is one of the strongest ways, the strongest forms of Britain in its international foreign cultural diplomacy.
And what people say on these occasions, and we've been here before, of course, although not on this scale, is that once these things have gone, it's very hard to get them back.
Yes, that's absolutely the case. Audiences just migrate. They go away. It's much harder to find a reason for retuning. And by the way, the idea that you save large sums of money by cutting shortwave broadcast to Russia and China, well, you do save money by cutting shortwave broadcasting, but, you know, those transmitters also carry the World Service in English. And so the moment you take a cut in one place, you produce really damaging consequences in others. That's why it's such a very bad day.
So, why did the British Foreign Office allow those services to be cut? Well, the man in charge of that agency is Foreign Secretary William Hague. He spoke with the BBC's Martha Carney.
The BBC World Service can't be immune from the changes that we're making in the public sector and across government as a whole. There is an additional point, of course, which is that services do have to change over time. There's been a huge rise, for instance, in the use of online services in Russia and a huge reduction in the radio services. So we do have to adapt to that over time, and the countries to which the World Service broadcasts does have to change over time. The last government recognised that by closing 11 separate language services, much as the people who supported the last government were complaining about this.
Sure.
Today they did the same thing when they were in office.
In power. But is there a problem with providing online services? If you look at China and the Mandarin Chinese radio services being cut, they're blocked often, aren't they?
Well, so have radio services been jammed in countries that don't want to put their people to hear from the World Service. So that can apply on many different technologies. And we're also providing in this settlement for new services in Urdu, in Hindi, in sub-Saharan Africa, which can be sold on to other broadcasters. So, of course, when you hear the headlines about things, you hear about the reductions in services.
Sure.
You don't hear about some of the things we are providing for the future.
As Foreign Secretary, you're very aware of the concept of soft power, of exerting Britain's influence around the world. Aren't you concerned that there could be a loss in this kind of soft power, which actually might be more efficient than perhaps some of the other functions of the Foreign Office?
Well, that's why we have to maintain a strong world service for the future, and I think that's what we will be able to do. There are five language services that will close here, mainly in the Balkans, and also Portuguese for Africa and English in the Caribbean. But there are 26 language services that will continue.
British Foreign Secretary William Hague. And Hague mentioned the English Caribbean service. The head of that service is Debbie Ransom. I asked her about the service and its value to listeners.
Our audience basically is on FM across the Caribbean, on 48 partner stations from Guyana, Radio Guyana, right up to Radio Jamaica and Belize, Radio Belize, Love FM, and in Bermuda. So the 48 stations take our programmes, BBC Caribbean Report, we have a morning and an evening drive time edition, and we also have a weekly programme called Caribbean Magazine, and a programme prepared by World Service Sports called Sports Caribbean. So we have this audience where we are a part of the local schedule, and they say we're now joining the BBC, and so people are listening to us on their local radio stations. In addition to that, four FM relays in Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Barbados and Antigua Barbuda, where they get 24/7 BBC World Service, including the Caribbean programming.
And what kind of news and information do you provide that is exclusive, that essentially is not provided by any other broadcaster in the region?
Well, our USP is based on the state of the media market. There are a lot of stations and they play music, whether it's dancehall, whether it's calypso, whether it's gospel. It's very music-based. And in Trinidad, a lot of Hindi, a lot of Hindu music. So those stations work for their specific audiences. But our USP is then joining the dots between these 15 territories. So talking about something that is happening in Jamaica that relates to trade with Guyana, looking at the formation of the Caribbean Court of Justice, the pan-regional stuff. And on top of that, the Caribbean, as it is reflected in the world when prime ministers come to other parts of the world and how they're treated, and also Caribbean-related issues in world policies.
And there's no other station or network that provides similar kind of information or is kind of waiting in the wings to do so once your service ends?
Others have tried, and I have worked for them. The Caribbean News Agency, the most well-known one, they have clawed back their radio product over the last few years because it is very expensive to do on the ground. So they cut it back to, a one-minute bulletin. They are now actually considering, can they find the money money to try and do it for themselves. And if you look at our website, bbccaribbean.com, we put together a page looking at the history of the service and explaining the cuts. And people started to email in, and a debate has started in the last, Thursday into Friday. A debate started Thursday into Friday, looking at the whole, so how are we going to do this for ourselves, you know? And the debate is exciting, started by the Association of Caribbean Media Workers, who are saying, look, our colleagues up in London will no longer be able to do what they do. Who's going to fill this void? How do we find the money and the resources to do it for ourselves if the BBC is not doing it for us?
This, of course, is an English language service, unlike some of the other language services that have been cut. It's the same language as the main language of the BBC. So is there an argument that the BBC could, you know, still would be able to offer BBC programming, but not Caribbean specific?
Oh, yes, but you see, that has been the beauty of the Caribbean service. Why it works is because it doesn't try to reinvent the wheel. So the global news, what's happening in Afghanistan, Iraq, Moscow, that is there. And Caribbean Report comes off the back of that with the pan-regional news. So it's almost like the Trojan horse that has delivered the world service to the Caribbean. So they tune in for Caribbean Report for somebody to join the dots across the different island states. And then for some of them, they stay with the world news and keep, if it's on FM, they will stay with that and they will follow it.
What about this question of soft power? I mean, a lot of people have brought this up, that this could be viewed as quite an inexpensive, efficient way of maintaining the influence of, not so much the influence of Britain, but of the influence of some of the values that the BBC stands for, of the role of media, impartial media in a liberal democracy. Do you see that being now on the wane in the Caribbean as a result of this cut?
I hope not, but some of the comments we've been getting this week and the way people have viewed the Caribbean service in the past is that we are the independent voice that they can turn to. So it may well be that there are two or three stations on, say, a smaller island, but one is state-owned and it carries a lot of what the Prime Minister's been doing for the day, and the other one might be owned by the opposition leader's brother. And it slags off what the government has been doing for the day. So if you want to make an independent comment on both what the government and the opposition are doing, you call BBC Caribbean. So what does this mean about soft power? People view Britain, because of what they hear on the BBC, they view Britain as that independent place where fairness and justice still reign. So there is still somewhere, you know, they're no longer British territories. Well, actually, some of our broadcasters are British overseas territories. But for the rest of them, they're independent states. But their legal system, the values that they get from broadcasting, they're taking from the BBC. And it sets a benchmark, and it's a British benchmark that people respect.
Debbie Ransom, head of the BBC Caribbean Service. Now, the loss of British influence overseas, I mean, who cares, right? I mean, Britain was an empire, but it's not anymore. So why should it rule the airwaves? And when it doesn't, which other countries will fill the void, and how will they fill the void? The BBC's Eddie Mair asked that of George Brock. He's head of journalism at City University in London, and he started by talking about which other broadcasters rival the BBC World Service.
You can divide up the rivals to the World Service into two groups, what you might call the traditional group. That's obviously headed by the Voice of America. That's a long-established big American radio station, broadcasts hundreds of hours. Still, there's Deutsche Welle in Germany, there's Radio France Internationale in France. But all of those broadcasters, just like the World Service, have been suffering kind of cuts because government expenditure is under pressure. The other group is countries like China, Iran, Russia, Turkey, Brazil, and so on.
And who is winning the battle for airspace? And can it really be a battle for minds?
It is genuinely extremely difficult to see that because almost none of these stations are obliged to reveal actually who listens to their broadcasts. It's reasonable to assume that there's a pretty big audience for China because its broadcasters go in enormous numbers of languages. For example, it's 5 years ago this month that China Radio began broadcasting in Swahili in Kenya. So the Chinese footprint would be pretty big. Russia be pretty large. It's, after all, the inheritor of Radio Moscow of Cold War days. We have no idea how many people listen, for example, to the big broadcasting operation run by Iran.
Are those programs, do they tend to reflect the views and the values of the countries, if not the governments?
The really important thing that distinguishes the new group of ambitious global broadcasters is that they have absolutely no truck with the idea of neutrality or impartiality or separation from the state. These broadcasters, like the ones coming out, the broadcasters coming out of Iran, Russia, or China, are quite explicitly and openly there to put the perspective of that country, and that usually means that government and state, and they say so.
There are lots of people today speaking up for the World Service. Looking at this globally, how is the BBC World Service regarded in that very complex mix of channels and national interest that you've outlined?
I think the BBC World Service remains extremely highly regarded. Reach and resources are one thing, but reputation is also very, very important. And the World Service's reputation right now stands just as high as it ever did, and that gives it a great deal of extra reach. And even where it might not possibly have the reach or it's had to shorten what it's doing, nevertheless, it will have an enormous amount of clout when people do get it.
Will some of those other countries be looking at the list of services which are closing shortly at the World Service and start ticking them off and open up services of their own?
There's no question that the well-resourced and ambitious ones will try to move into territory that has been left. If you are Chinese global broadcasting, they have enormous expanding interests. They will put down radio footprints wherever they think it will help influence their case. So yes, people like China and Russia will probably try to move into the gaps. Whether or not they will succeed is another thing.
And what about the technology? Where is this headed?
Where people are headed is into FM, satellite TV, and lastly, of course, the internet. Don't forget that people can carry radio on the internet. Retransmission is a really, really important thing because it's relatively expensive to bounce radio signals a long way. And you can pick up all sorts of radio stations if you choose to look for them. The last time that I was in Qatar, I was in a car speeding past modern Arab 21st century Arabic architecture and discovered that I was listening because the driver had internet radio in his car to Radio Devon.
And Radio Devon, just by way of explanation, is a local, a very local radio from rural southwest England. The big event of the year in that part of the world is the Devon County Fair, where prize cows and sheep and tractors are auctioned off. And they're listening in Qatar? Well, I guess local really is global, or the other way around. Well, that's it for this week. Send me your comments and suggestions via Facebook and Twitter. See you next week.